want to speak about mainly one topic tonight that has a connection to this coming week's Sedra. And if there's time in the end, maybe something from last week's Sedra also we didn't get to. Okay, we're slowly approaching the 3 weeks and the period of Avelus on the Beis HaMikdash, and the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. And the Chafetz Chaim says that Sinas Chinam led to Lashon Hara, and one of the sources, the roots of Sinas Chinam and Lashon Hara is Kina, jealousy. And that relates to this week's Sedra, because Chazal say that the foundation of Korach's rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu was based on jealousy. He thought that he should have gotten the job to be the head of the family of Kahas, and he was overlooked, and it was given to Elitzofan ben Uziel instead, who was younger than him, and therefore he tried to nullify everything that Moshe Rabbeinu did and become Kohen Gadol himself. Couldn't get the job he wanted, he went for the big time. And the truth is that the rabbis say, the rabbi Svarim say, Tzaddik says, that had Korach not sinned, there was a job that was meant specifically for him that never materialized, no one else ever got. He was the only one, and his children would have gotten it after him. He was supposed to be Levi Gadol. Just like there's a Kohen Gadol, there should have been a Levi Gadol. And Korach would have had that job. But because he sinned, that job never materialized, and he ended up getting swallowed up by the earth. So Kina is a very, very negative thing, jealousy. It is the last of the Aseres HaDibros. The last of the Ten Commandments is Lo Sachmot, and both Rabbeinu Bachya and later the Pele Yoetz say that the reason that the Ten Commandments end with the prohibition of coveting, of being jealous, is because by coveting and being jealous, a person can transgress all the Ten Commandments, and not only that, the whole Torah itself. From jealousy comes tremendous, tremendous tragedy. And we know that that's the case in history. The first sin of Adam and Chava was a result of the jealousy of the Nachash of Adam and Chava. He was jealous of them. And after that, Cain was jealous of his brother Hevel. And then Joseph and his brothers, Yosef and the Shvatim, all was under current of jealousy. And Korach, this week's Sedra, like we said. And then finally the Malchus in Klal Yisrael divided, Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda, because of jealousy. So jealousy has caused tremendous tragedies throughout history. And Chazal say, Hakina v'hataiva v'hakavod motziin es ha'adam min ha'olam. Kina is one of the three things, along with taiva, desire, lust, and kavod, honor, that take a person out of the world. And the simple meaning is, and so says the Me'am Loes in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, takes a person out of this world and the next world. And the Pele Yoetz says that it is a detestable, disgusting, abominable midah to be a person who's jealous. And Chazal say that jealousy, even within a person's own home, where he creates jealousy amongst his own family, eventually affects the entire Jewish people. So says the Avestra of Nosson. And jealousy ends up causing anger and hatred and destroys families. Right? How many stories are there of families that were fine, united, loving families that fought over Yerushas, right? Over what's it called, inheritances, and destroyed the families completely. And the Orchos Tzaddikim says that jealousy is a sickness. It eats, Shlomo HaMelech says, Rekev Atzomos Kinam. Jealousy rots your bones. The simple meaning, we'll see a deeper meaning in a little while. But the simple meaning is also true. Simple meaning means that it eats you up alive. And not only does it eat your flesh, but it eats up the bones too, which normally aren't affected so easily. And also because it eats up the bones, it rots them. There's no antidote. There's no refuah. There's no healing. And a person who's a jealous person is constantly depressed, constantly upset, and sorrowful. And because of that, he can't think, and he can't turn to Torah or to Tefillah. Can't daven with a clear head. And he can't, what's it called, the Rambam says, his head is not open to acquire good midos or intellectual things. He's so obsessed, an obsession, that's the word. It's an obsession. Kina is an obsession that's a sickness and that makes a person, obsesses a person completely and keeps him away from anything positive. And it causes... And the hatred that's caused by jealousy never goes away, because other things you can correct, it'll go away, but the jealousy remains forever, and therefore it causes tremendous fights in Klal Yisrael. And because a person is jealous of other people, he pursues the keeping up with the Cohens or the Joneses, whoever is keeping up with, right? Keeping up with the neighbors. And people have to make weddings as good as the neighbor, or go into other, they have to have houses as nice, even if they can't afford it. And because of that, they go into debt, and they can't pay back the debts, and their lives become miserable financially. And it's all because they can't take it that somebody else has something more than them, and they have to keep up with the style or whatever. And because of that, we have a special prayer that some say, it's not in Nusach Ashkenaz, but in many of the Nusach Sfard Sidurim, it exists. At the end of Shemoneh Esrei, we say the prayer, Yehi Ratzon Shelo Yala Kinas Odom Alai Velo Kinas Yal Acherim. No one should be jealous of me, and I shouldn't be jealous of other people. Not only does a person have to see to it that he doesn't, what's it called, isn't jealous of other people, but he shouldn't raise the jealousy of other people either. He shouldn't do things that make other people jealous, because he causes then ayin hara for himself. People look at him with jealousy, and it ruins him, and it also causes tremendous tsaris, misfortune in Klal Yisrael. And there's a special tefillah Motzei Shabbos. In the tefillos of Motzei Shabbos, similar, that Rabban Shalom, save me from being jealous of others and other people being jealous of me. And therefore, since jealousy is such a essential negative quality and character trait, and it's the source of so much misfortune, in order to be able to combat it, and to be strong, not to fall into its trap, the one of the things a person has to do is to learn what it's all about, and how therefore can you protect yourself from jealousy if you understand how it works, what's its foundation. A lot of times, in order to be able to acquire good characteristics, and in order to be able to protect yourself from bad characteristics, it's a good idea to understand the characteristic, and then if you understand the enemy, you can create strategies to protect yourself from it. So if you look at this bad character trait as an enemy, it would be a good idea for us to understand how it works. So let me quote to you a few Mamori Chazal and a few questions, And then we will, through the questions, define what exactly is the root of jealousy. Where does it come from? First of all, Chazal say, Rekev Atzomos Kina. It's a pasuk in Mishlei, that jealousy rots your bones. And as we said already, you can understand that literally. It's an obsession. It's a sickness. And it eats you up alive. But we'll see there's a deeper meaning to what that means. And Chazal say on this pasuk in Sota that what you want, you won't get. What you're jealous of and want, you won't get. And what you have, they take away from you. Now on the surface, that seems as a punishment. If you're jealous of other people, you won't get what you want. And not only that, you'll be punished, but what you have will be taken away. But we'll see that it's not a punishment, but it's a natural result of what jealousy represents. So we'll leave that now on a back burner and go to another question. The prohibition of being jealous in the most extreme way is already in the Ten Commandments. Lo sachmod. Don't covet. Now that prohibition needs explanation. Because lo sachmod, it says, don't covet your neighbor's wife or his donkey or his house or anything else that belongs to him. It would seem to imply that the verb coveting and that emotion of wanting the other person's wife, donkey, house is all the same emotion. And if you think about it, it can't be the same emotion. It's not the same emotion wanting your neighbor's donkey as wanting your neighbor's wife. Unless the donkey is really special, or the wife is really no good, or there's something sick about the guy, right? One of those three things have to be true for the emotion of wanting your neighbor's donkey being the same emotion as wanting your neighbor's wife. Why did the Torah use the same verb to describe wanting your neighbor's donkey and wanting your neighbor's wife? In addition, the Svarim say, the Vilna Gaon, I think says it already, or maybe even before the Vilna Gaon, it says that each of the first five commandments correspond to the second five. The commandments were on two luchos, on two tablets. Five of them were basically between man and God, the first five, and the last five were basically between man and man. And there's a correlation between them, that the first of each tablet correspond to each other, the second of each tablet correspond, and so on. And all of them are very easy to see the correlation, the correspondence, except for one. Let's see how it works. The first is on the side of spiritual, believe in God. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That corresponds to the first on the side between man and man, don't murder. What's the correlation between believing in God and not murdering? Very simple. Man is created in God's image. When you believe in God, you are increasing God's image in the world, so to say. If you don't believe in God, you're decreasing God's image. That's spiritual. When you murder, you are decreasing God's image in the world. When you fail to murder, you are increasing God's image in the world. Same thing, except this is in a physical way, this is in a spiritual way. Second, on the spiritual side, don't serve idolatry. On the physical side, don't commit adultery. What's the connection? Very simple. Idolatry is the Jewish people going after a God that's not theirs. God is like our husband. We're the wife. Straying after strange gods in a spiritual fashion is like a woman straying after a strange man in a physical way. Idolatry is spiritual adultery, and adultery is physical idolatry. So there's a tremendous connection between the second two. How about the third? The third on the side of spirituality is don't take God's name in vain. What's the third? On the side of physicality, don't steal. Where's the connection? So one simple idea is that if a person steals, he usually covers up his crime by swearing falsely in God's name. So the two are connected. There's a much deeper connection. We'll mention it just peripherally because I don't want to spend the time on this. There's much more to speak about. But God's name, all of creation is a combination of God's names. Creation is a manifestation of God as the Creator. And when you take God's name in vain, basically it means that you use the world in a way that is not permitted. So basically you're stealing. You're stealing the world that God created and gave you the parameters within which you have the right to use that world, and you are taking God's name in vain, which is tantamount to stealing in the physical world. Okay. What's the fourth one? Keep the Shabbos. Don't bear false witness. Perfect connection. Why? Shabbos is testimony that God created the world. By keeping Shabbos, you testify to the fact that God created the world. It's His world. He can tell you when to use it, when not to use it, how to use it, and so on. If you don't keep Shabbos, you are basically giving false testimony. That's why we stand up when we say Vayichulu, and you need a minimum of two people to say it together. It's testimony, like two witnesses. So that's on the spiritual side. Shabbos is spiritual testimony to the fact that God created the world. And bearing false witness in a physical way parallels the concept of Shabbos. Now comes the fifth. The fifth on the spiritual side is honor your father and mother. Kabeda Savicha Vesimecha. And on this physical side is Lo Sachmod. Don't covet. Here there doesn't seem to be any correlation. What is there a connection between honoring your parents and not coveting? Basically, in order to answer all these questions, we have to describe and define what coveting, what jealousy is. Where does it come from? Jealousy basically is a feeling that I am inadequate, I'm not happy being me, and I want to be somebody else in order to be successful. And in order to be somebody else, I need all the things that he has, because that will bring me success. What I have, what I am, is not appealing to me. What I am is not important to me. I would be successful if I were so-and-so, and I had what so-and-so had. And therefore, the feeling is not so much you want the donkey because it's strong. You want the wife because she's pretty. There's nothing to do with that. That's a separate prohibition. That's a prohibition of lust. That kind of wanting. If you want the donkey because it's strong, there's nothing wrong with that. The feeling is I want to be so-and-so. And to be so-and-so, to be successful, I need what so-and-so has. His things, his stature, his status means success. And therefore, being him and having what he has will make me a successful person. So I don't want it because of its merits. I want it because I want to be him. It all stems from the same exact emotion. And therefore, that's what it says, that it corresponds to Kibbut Avaim. Because if you're not happy being you, then you are definitely not happy with your parents, because they made you. So it is very difficult for a person to honor his parents if he's angry at them for making him and not making him somebody else. And not only that, not appreciating who you are is in itself affront to your parents, not honoring your parents. So honoring a parent and not coveting stem from the same root of being happy with who you are and not being jealous of somebody else. If you're happy with who you are, then you can respect your parents. If you're not happy with who you are, you're going to be jealous of other people, and you won't respect your parents. And therefore, that's what it says, Rekev Atzamos Kina. Kina rots your Atzamos. The Etza means bones. But the bones are the essence, Atzmius, the essence of the person. When you're jealous of someone else, it rots your essence because you don't recognize who you are and you only consider it important to be somebody else. You only consider it significant if you could be somebody else and have what somebody else has. But what you have is not significant to you. So it rots your essence. And what happens from that? A very natural result. And that is that what you have, what you want, you won't get. Because you can't be somebody else. God made you you, and you have a role to play in this world, and you can't be somebody else. And what you have, your role, and your wherewithal to fulfill that role, you'll lose. Why? Because it'll atrophy. If you don't develop your unique status and stature, because you're constantly focusing in on being somebody else, then by nature you're going to lose what you have. So you're going to both lose your unique role, and you're not going to be able to take over somebody else's role because you can't be somebody else. That's what it means. It's not a punishment. It's a natural result of what jealousy is. And therefore, the Ibn Ezra says, how do you protect yourself from jealousy? L'chara, jealousy is such a natural feeling sometimes that you see something somebody has and you want it. How do you protect yourself from that? You could protect yourself from stealing it, from doing something, from saying something. Hold yourself back. How do you hold yourself back from feeling something? It's like, it's automatic. It's like almost an instinct. It's almost a something that you can't control. It's involuntary. It's an involuntary feeling. Says the Ibn Ezra, if you have the right hashkafa, if you have the right outlook on life, it's possible to see something that someone else has or is and not want it, not to have that involuntary feeling. How is so? So the Ibn Ezra says it in the following way. I'll tell you what he says, and then I will bring it up to date. He says, a person is only jealous and only covets what he thinks is within his league, what's within his grasp. But if it's something he recognizes is totally outside of his domain, then he doesn't want it, because it's something that he has no connection to. He says, the peasant doesn't see the king's daughter, the princess, and have this tremendous feeling of, oh, I wish to, I could marry the princess. Because he may have lust for her, but not coveting, not jealousy, because not in his league. It's something beyond his the realm of possibility. I'd like to bring it up to date, since we don't have king's daughters that much, or peasants. I think the better example would be the following. Imagine a doctor and a shoemaker who are neighbors. And the doctor gets the state of the art sonogram machine. Right? Ultrasound. Right, ultrasound. Yeah, I used to say it with x-ray, but that's like passé. So, gets this state of the art CAT scan. Okay. And the shoemaker gets the state of the art sewing machine. Now, do you think the doctor is going to be jealous of the shoemaker? Oh, wow, I wish I had a sewing machine like that. Unless he sews up his patients with a sewing machine, and if he does, he's not going to remain a doctor too long. What in the world does he need a sewing machine for? He's a doctor. You think the shoemaker is going to be jealous of the doctor? Oh, I wish I had a CAT scan like that. Right? What does he need a CAT scan for? He knows what's in the shoe's feet. Right? He doesn't need a ultrasound or a CAT scan as a shoemaker. So it's not reasonable that the shoemaker will ever be jealous of the doctor, or the doctor jealous of the shoemaker, because the shoemaker knows that this is not necessary for his role in this world. His profession doesn't need CAT scans, and the opposite with the doctor when it comes to the sewing machine. But let another doctor get a better CAT scan, or another shoemaker get a better sewing machine, the shoemaker is going to be jealous of the shoemaker, and the doctor jealous of the doctor, because that's within my realm. That has connection to me. Therefore, says the Ibn Ezra, what you need is to form your understanding of this world. That this world, as we've said many times, is a team effort. Shalom means shlemus. It means perfection. And perfection is not the domain of any individual except for God. God's perfect. God is called Shalom. His name is Shalom. He's perfect. But human beings aren't perfect, neither is anything in this world perfect. God is the one who's Osa Shalom. He makes perfection by bringing all the various things together, and together, there, under Him, united under Him, working together in the proper way, that's the closest that this creation can come to perfection. But it's a team effort, and it's on all levels. It's on the level of the physical world. There is nothing in this world individually that can make up everything the world needs. It's only when everything gets together. And that's why when everything was created individually, it says God saw it and it was good. It's only on the sixth day that God looked at everything and He said everything is very good. It says the Sfarno, what made all these good things now very good? It's just a bunch of good things. Why now is it very good? So he gives the following answer, which I'm going to give an example to before I tell you the answer. Take an automobile and disassemble it, break it down into its components. Where I come from, they do that often. So you have now all the components of a car on your lawn. You have a horn, gas tank, seats, whatever, tires. Each thing has a function. You could use the tires for a float at the beach. You could use the horn for a musical instrument. You could use the gas tank to store liquids. Everything is good. But when you put it all together and it functions harmoniously together as an automobile, the automobile is a lot better than the sum total of its parts. Because now it's a functioning automobile. When the Rabbanu Shem created each individual thing, it was good. But when he put it all together to be a functioning universe, together it's very good. So that's on the physical level. On the social levels also. If everybody would be doctors, we'd have a very healthy world. But who would take out the garbage? And if everybody was garbage men, we'd have a very clean world, but who would take care of the sick? So you need lawyers, doctors, businessmen, rabbis, right? You need an array of different professions and services, farmers, right, workers, everybody, right, physical, manual laborers, because if there's no manual laborers, then people won't have anything to eat. There's no harvesters. So everybody serves a purpose, and no one person can keep the world going socially. You need the total array of all the various services and professions, and that's how the world approaches perfection, as a unified effort. The same thing applies in the spiritual realm, as we've mentioned many times. There is no one individual in this world, man, woman, Kohen, Levi, Israel, that could ever keep 613 mitzvahs. If God gave us a total of 613 mitzvahs, who's it for? It's not for a regular Jew, because there are many mitzvahs that apply only to Kohanim. So we, right away, we regular Jews just don't have 613 mitzvahs at all. So what do you tell me? So Kohanim do. Not true. There are mitzvahs that don't apply to Kohanim. Like the mitzvah of redeeming your firstborn son does not apply to a Kohen as a father. So he's missing that mitzvah. There are mitzvahs that are only for men. No woman could ever fulfill those mitzvahs. Yet there are mitzvahs that are only for women. At least in my lifetime, I'm hoping that no man will ever fulfill the mitzvah of bringing the sacrifice after childbirth. That is a woman's mitzvah, hopefully. Right? Slowly getting to the point where maybe men will fulfill that. But in any case, so if you're a man, you have mitzvahs that no woman has. If you're a woman, you have mitzvahs that no man has. If you're a Kohen, you have mitzvahs that no Yisrael has. And if you're a Yisrael, you have mitzvahs no Kohen has. So unless you're a Kohen, Levi, Israel, man and woman wrapped up all in one, which today may be possible, but under normal circumstances was not, you can't have 613 mitzvahs. So how do we have 613 mitzvahs? The answer is that we didn't receive the Torah as individuals. We received the Torah ke'ish echad b'lev echad, as a conglomerate called the Jewish people. And every person has his role to play, his specific mitzvahs that he has within that 613. It's a group, a team effort. It's not individual. And therefore, the Everybody has to realize that when they come into this world, they have a specific part of that perfection of the world. They don't have everything. They have a part. And their part is important as anybody else's part, because without all the parts, perfection cannot be achieved, can't even be approached. And therefore, we have the comparison that a person who comes into this world is like he has a part in the play. History and everything that goes on in the world is like a gigantic play that's going on. It has many acts, many different players at any one time on the stage, and God is the director and the producer and the writer. Okay, except he gives leeway for the actors to improvise a little bit also and have some kind of free choice. And God provides the person with his part. He also provides him, and that includes when he comes on the stage, which period in history, where he is on the stage, right, and what his part is. Is he the court jester? Is he the king, the queen, whatever? And it also includes, if you have a part, you get a costume to fit your part. It includes the body that you get as your costume. And it also includes your props. Every part needs certain props to be able to fulfill the part properly. So you get your material possessions that fit your part. And if a person understands that God is the one who's directing and producing this play, and he's the one who gives out the parts, and he's the one who gives the props according to the part, and the costume according to the part, then a person has to be sameach b'chelko. He has to be happy with his portion, and with his costume, and with his props, and realize that what I have is necessary for my part, and what somebody else has is necessary for their part, but the two never don't have any connection with the other. It's like the doctor and the shoemaker. Because my part is to be the doctor, I don't need what the shoemaker has. And the shoemaker's part, and that goes not only on different things, but how much I have. And because you have more, doesn't mean your part is more important. The court jester in a play may have 10 props and 5 changes of costume, whereas the king in the play may only have 1 costume and no props, or 1 scepter. Does that make the king less important than the court jester? Obviously not. But in order to fulfill the part of the court jester, you need 10 props and 5 changes of clothing. To be the king, you don't need that. But the king's part is obviously as important or more important than the court jester in the scheme of things. So a person, if he inculcates with him in himself this understanding that every single thing that a person has, what he is, is his part in this world, then he'll work on developing his part and be happy with it, realizing that's his mandate from God. That's the parameters within which God said your soul has to function in this world. And your part, your body, your material, fit your soul. And your soul was made to fit a part of that puzzle of the whole play. So what you have and where you are and what you are fits your role in this world. That's what you're supposed to accomplish. So wanting somebody else's prop, somebody else's costume, somebody else's part is futile. So if you understand that, that's why Moshe Feinstein says when Esav and Yaakov were arguing over the present that Yaakov sent Esav, Esav said, keep your present, I have more than I need. And Yaakov said, you keep the present, I have everything I need. And Moshe Feinstein said, wouldn't it have been proper for Yaakov to say, I have more than I need? He was a rich man. Had he been poor, he would have been happy. Why did he say, I have everything I need? That means being rich was exactly what he needed, not one thing more, not one thing less. Wouldn't he have been happy if he was poor? And Moshe says, no. Because that is exactly what he needed for his part. The court jester can't say, well, I have 10 props and the king only has 1. I have more than I need. No, you have exactly what you need to be the court jester. Yaakov had exactly what he needed to be Yaakov. Only Esau, who looks at material possessions as what you get for your pleasure, can say, I have more than I need. I could be happy with 100. I have 200. I'd like more. But the concept of more only exists if you think that you are the source of getting what you get and it's all arbitrary. The Chofetz Chaim once overheard two businessmen speaking. And one said to the other one, "How's business?" And the other one said, "It wouldn't hurt if it was a little bit better." Chofetz Chaim went over to him and he said, "How do you know it wouldn't hurt if it'd be better? How do you know that if it'd be better, you wouldn't be the object of a robbery or some other terrible thing? Maybe what your business is exactly as it should be. And that's what you need. And if it would be better, it wouldn't be better." So a person who has that philosophy of life, he understands, he has emun and bitachon that the Rebbeim Shem created this world. And he created every neshama, and every neshama is different. And every neshama has its purpose in this world. And no two people have the same purpose. And therefore no two people have the same body, the same costume, nor the same material possessions, nor the same role in life, nor the same character traits, nor the same talents. Everything is apportioned out by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, what you should do is recognize who you are and what you are and what your talents are and what your abilities are and what you have that God gave you, and be appreciative of it. Be a Makir Tova. Recognize the good in what you are and you have and develop that. Then you'll never be jealous of somebody else, because somebody else is like the doctor and the shoemaker. Somebody else has no connection to me, because this is what I need, and that what they need is something different completely. Sometimes there's even a worse feeling. It's not just I want to be somebody else, but I'm jealous of someone else and I know I can't be them, but I don't want them to be what they are, because I can assert myself in one of two ways. I can make myself greater than the other person, or I can knock the other person down. Right? The first way, I have to build myself up. That's one kind of jealousy. But sometimes a person is jealous of someone else, and he would like to be what the other person is, but he knows he'll never be. So if I can't be that, then I want him to be it. That bothers me. Sometimes it's not so much what I don't have, it's that the other one does have. Famous Maisa with the a person came to a Rav, and he had a Shaila. He forgot to sell his chametz. And he found that he had a whole storehouse of liquor that he didn't sell. And the rabbi looked up, down, every possible way, and he couldn't come up with a heter, and he said, "I'm sorry, but you're going to have to destroy all that liquor." The person gave a big smile and he said, "Thank you, Rabbi. What's it called? It's a big loss for me, but if I finally have a chance to sacrifice something significant for the sake of God." He walked out with a big smile on his face and gave Rabbi Yasher Koach. The rabbi was really impressed. A few months later, the guy came before the rabbi over a dispute with another person over $25. And the rabbi looked into the case and he paskened against this person again, that he had to pay the other guy $25. And the guy went berserk. He started cursing the rabbi, "You know what you're talking about, and it's not true, and I'm not doing this," and whatever. After the other person left, the rabbi called this guy in. He said, "Look, you know, you cursed me, whatever. I realize that you just went berserk. But tell me something. A few months ago, I made you lose thousands of dollars worth of liquor. You gave this big smile, and you thanked me for giving the opportunity to serve God, right, with Mesiris Nefesh. And now for a measly $25 you go berserk?" He said, "Yeah. Then I lost. But now that guy gained. That I can't take. I could lose the $25, but not that he should get it." Right? They tell a bizarre story. That's just a mashal of a person who was a terrible, jealous person, a coveting person, and a person who had tremendous desire and lust. And a king gave them the following reward. He said, "One of you can ask for whatever you want, and the other one will get double of it." So the guy who was jealous didn't want to be the first one. He wanted the double. And the guy who had the lust, right, didn't want to wait. So what did the guy, first guy ask for? He asked that his eye be taken out. And that way they took out both of the eyes of the other guy. Right? That's sometimes how jealousy works. It's not so much what I gain, it's what, at least what's it called, what you don't have. The The Gemara says, based on this idea, that a person should never cause jealousy between his children. How so? By giving one something more or different than the other. Lodishana, we learn from Yaakov Avinu. He gave Yosef a special coat, and because of that there was jealousy, and look what happened from all of that. They sold him, and we went to Mitzrayim, all the tzoras that came from jealousy. On their level. So a person should never discriminate against his children. Don't change. Don't give one what you don't give the other. Now, on the surface, that's absurd. Right? I had a daughter who just got married a few months ago. Right? I have a son who's not married. Okay? Yeah. So when I went out and I rented her a wedding gown, I should have rented my son one too, in order not to make a difference between them. Right? Now, obviously, that's absurd. And my son really didn't want the wedding gown either. But why doesn't it apply to that? The answer is, about you can't give all children the same thing. They don't need the same thing. What you have to educate them is that they should feel that everybody's getting what they need in their circumstance, and if the circumstance would ever present itself, they'll get what the other one got when the circumstance presented. If I had two daughters, and one was 8, and one was 18, and one's getting married, and the other one's 8 years old, I would not buy the 8-year-old daughter a wedding gown either when she's 8. But I'd let her feel that when she will become 18 and she'll need the wedding gown, she'll get it just like the other sister got. The sister's not getting anything that she wouldn't get if she needed it also. And therefore, you can take in consideration the needs of children. Some need this, some don't need it. But everyone will get what they need based on their needs and based on circumstances. But nobody's getting on somebody else's cheshbon. The brothers felt that Yosef got something that all of them should have gotten, or none of them should have gotten, but he shouldn't have been singled out. There was no reason why it was something, and Yaakov understood that no, Yosef needed that. It fit Yosef, it didn't fit them. That was the difference between Yaakov's understanding and their understanding. In any case, there's another thing. Kina sofrim tar bechachma. This idea of being jealous and wanting to make yourself greater, right, or knock somebody else down, so because you want either want to be somebody else or you don't want them to be what they are, right, so you can be greater in comparison, either by knocking them down or raising yourself up or taking over what they have. Right, that applies to physical things. When it comes to physical things, it says, what's it called, that you should minimize, not be a jealous person. Be happy with what you have. When it comes to spiritual things, though, they should want more and more. And it's upheld by this idea of kinas sofrim tar b'chochma, that being jealous of somebody else's wisdom, somebody else's mitzvot, somebody else's midos tovot, that's a positive thing. But it's not always positive. And it says that's how a person should be. Bashamayim mimal, when it comes to heavenly things, you should look up to the people who have more than you and aspire towards the greater. And by aretz, when it comes to gashmias, the physical things, earthly things, mamata, look at the people beneath you and be happy that you have what you have, right? Compare yourself to the people who have less. When it comes to spiritual things, compare it to yourself to the person who has more. But the chara, that's also jealousy. Person should be happy to be himself. In fact, Korah didn't want physical things. He wanted to be a Kohen. He wanted to what's it called? These were spiritual things. First of all, the Marsha says, it says, Kina Sofrim. A Sofer is not the Chacham. He's not the, he hasn't reached the plateau of being a sage. He's on the way. He's a teacher. He's whatever he may be. Only Sofrim who are on the way can utilize jealousy in a positive way, at least for what you call for spiritual things. But it doesn't say kinas chacham. Once you reach the level of chachma, you don't need that incentive. Then even that jealousy is not good. In addition, it depends how you're jealous. You see somebody else who's smarter than you, more frum than you, better midos. I want to be like him. Now that could be two ways. I don't want to be him. But if he can do it, then it's an incentive for me to want to do it too. I want a good thing. Or, I don't want him to be like that. I want to be on the same level. How do you know if you're jealous of the other person in a positive way, giving you the incentive to want to improve, or because you want to be like him. Difference is, what happens if he would lose his wisdom, his midos tovos, would you be just as happy? Is it only because you want to have it for yourself? Then that's fine, since it's a positive thing. But if the idea is, I can't stand somebody else being better than me, even spiritually. And I would be just as happy if they weren't so great. I don't have to have it. Then that's trait. That's not kina sofer. Kina sofer at least is, I want him to have it, but I'd like to have it too. Not that I don't want him to be better than me. I just want to be as good as him. And since it's a positive thing to want that kind of thing, that's okay. But again, we said it's not the ideal. Because you should need that incentive to be somebody else. Try to develop the best you are without having to have an incentive from somebody else. The Gemara says, along these lines also you can understand, it says, a person is jealous of everyone except for his student and his child. Why? Because there you feel it is you. The jealousy is, I want to be him. But a child is an extension of me. A student is an extension of me. So I feel that if my student has it, my child has it, to a certain degree, it's me. So there's no place for jealousy. And therefore, there's another way to avoid jealousy. The other way of avoiding jealousy is to feel a connection with everybody. On the one hand, to realize you have your specific role to play, but you have a connection to everybody else. So what everybody else is, helps you. In other words, I have my part in the play, so there's nothing to be jealous of somebody else's part. But if I feel an achdus, a unity amongst all the players in the play, and we're all in this play together, then your part basically benefits me too. I'm part of that. I'm part of your part, and I'm part of my part. There's nothing to be jealous of. I benefit by you doing your part because we're all in this play together. And therefore, whatever happens in the play is to all of our benefit, because the cast gets the covet, right, from being a successful player. It's not each player individually. So by having that tremendous affinity with other people and feeling part of them also takes away the jealousy. Recognizing your uniqueness and that everybody has their part to play helps, and at the same time recognizing the unity between all the parts and that everybody's part benefits everybody else's part and we're all part of the same cast also takes away jealousy. Now, says that the hope for the future is by getting away from jealousy. There's a medrash that says the following. Medrash says, what will ensure that we'll be able to come back to Eretz Yisrael, right? It says that Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu says like this. Ba'oso Shah in Golus Bavel. Kofza Rachel Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rachel Imenu jumped before God in order to defend the Jewish people in Golus. Ribono Shel Olam, Goli Lefanecha SheYaakov Ohavani Ava Yaseira. You know that Yaakov Avinu loved me extra love. The Ovad Bishvili LaAvi Shevashan. He worked specifically for me for 7 years. Shegias Mani Sui LeBali Yoatz Avi Lachniteni Bachosi. When time came for my marriage, my father tricked him and substituted my sister. Velo Kinesi Bachosi. I wasn't jealous of my sister. Velo Tseisi LeCherpa. And I didn't let her be embarrassed. Umayim ani basar v'dam, offer ve'efer, if I'm a human being, right, ashes and dust, lo kinesi batzara sheli, I was not jealous of my sister when she came in my place. Ata melechai v'kayim v'rachman, you are the eternal king, right, God of mercy. Nipnei makinesa b'vrezar, what are you jealous of the idolatry, she'in b'mamesh v'glisa, and because of that you put your children into galus? The Rabban Shalom had tremendous mercy because of her, what she said, on the Jewish people. And he said, because of you, I will let the Jews go back to their place. Rachel's crying for her children. She refuses to be comforted. And God tells her, stop crying. There is reward for your actions, and the shavu banim leburan, they'll come back to Eretz Yisrael. Now, on the surface, it seems that God was impressed with Rachel's tears for the Jewish people, not with her words. But the idea is that if somebody cannot be jealous in such a situation, that means that they recognize what their role is, and they're not jealous of somebody else, and also they have such a close connection with the sister that their pain, that sister's pain is her pain. She wouldn't gain anything by doing for me, because both of us are in the same boat together. And therefore, I want for you what I want for myself. So there's nothing to be jealous of. Both things are extremely important. And therefore, a Rachel who cries for her children is because she really can feel the pain of them. So her tears are effective. And the Mesil Shisharim says that's the way the world's going to be when the Mashiach comes. Says like this, that, let's find it, here it is. V'hu mashiyieg lonu ha-novi al-azmana osi. This is what the Novi predicted for us in the future. Shalaman tia tovas Yisrael shleima. In order that when Mashiach comes, the goodness in the world will be complete and perfect. God will take out of our heart this terrible character trait of jealousy. And then the goodness will be complete, because nobody will feel jealous and hurt because somebody else has a good. They won't forgive somebody else good. If you have good, I'm happy. I have good, you're happy. So everybody's happy. Then the happiness and the goodness is complete. And the person who has good won't have to hide himself from his neighbors because he's afraid that they'll be jealous and give him an ayin hara. It'll go away. All of the jealousy of Ephraim and Tzorei Yehuda Yichrisu. Ephraim lo yikanes Yehuda. Ephraim will not be jealous of Yehuda, and Yehuda won't be jealous of Ephraim. And then there'll be the peace and tranquility that the angels enjoy. They're all happy together in serving God. Every angel knows he has his job. At the same time, he feels a camaraderie and a connection to the other one's job, because only when all of them are doing their job is the job being done completely. Ishi shal makomo. No one is jealous of the other one, because everyone recognizes his unique part, and at the same time that he needs all the other parts for there to be a perfection. They're happy with their portion, and they're also happy with everybody else's portion.
Well, 2 weeks ago, it was the bat mitzvah of our great granddaughter.
Great granddaughter, 10 years old.
And we had a bris mitzvah.